Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, JD and Ailish, MLB trade deadline day. Folks, we are 11 hours exactly from when the magic happens. Well, ends. Already been some stuff over the last couple days. If you're just waking up and listening, Noah Syndergaard linked to the Blue Jays roughly right now, since you probably went to bed last night, hearing that could be a possibility. You know, it's exciting ask to see them being
what
in.
What time did you go to bed?
But everybody's being in. What time did you go to bed? 12:30?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was late too. And
it's hard because you're just like, every time your phone buzzes, you're like, oh, what is it?
That's what I'm saying. It was like, everybody started running with the Syndergaard thing pretty late.
Yeah, and then you're like, I should probably stay up just in case it happens.
Well, I always feel like as soon as I go to bed, that's when all the trades are going to happen. And that's when everything's going to go down.
Wouldn't be the first time, eh?
I'm going to have to scramble in the morning and be like, oh, what's those things? At least when it's at night, my brain's still awake. I can process it. I can think about it properly. Waking up and, you know, the hour before our show.
And then you're like, all right, it happened.
It's trauma. It's me going like, you can do this every day. you can do it, man. Just don't worry. You get to sleep early tonight. I make all these like lie promises to myself about like better sleep, and then you'll get this treat today, and this is what you'll do for yourself. And then it's just like, no, this is none of this. None of this happened.
I'm trying to think if there's been any, like, he's joining shortly. If there's been any huge trades that have ever happened while we're on the air, but could happen today. Stay tuned. We do have John now. John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, is joining us. John, Mr. Sportsnet this weekend. I'm literally looking at this TV in the studio, and your face is on it right now in front of me.
Well, Ailish, thank you. My apologies that you have to have all this Morosi all day. But I tell you, it's been a lot of fun. I love being back in Toronto, my first time here in 3 years. So yeah. I love the city and everybody at Sportsnet and the Fan who are so kind to me. So it's been great to be back, and let's hope we've got a lot of great Jays news to discuss today.
I hope so. Since we woke up and went to bed, Noah Syndergaard rumors and comments, like how close is this to happening, and how much are the Jays in on this?
I think they're a finalist, Ailish. I think that Syndergaard will get traded today, just based on the momentum of things from yesterday. I was told the three teams that were most serious were the Jays, the Braves, and the Phillies. And of course, the Braves have made their move to get Jake Odorizzi, which probably removes them from that really intense finalist category, which probably leaves it to the Jays and the Phillies. So I do think there is still a bit of distance to go. I'll be really curious to see if perhaps the Jays find a way to add a reliever to that deal. I'd be a little surprised if that was Raisel Iglesias, just based on the size of the contract. He may have been discussed here, but that would be, I think, from the Angels' standpoint, they might be able to get a little bit more for him if they market him elsewhere, even though Iglesias has not been quite as dominant this year as he was in the past. So I think overall we will be probably hearing Noah Syndergaard's name traded today. And I think it's probably at this stage most likely to be either Toronto or the Phillies.
Iglesias, yeah, the money and the season that he's had, it's kind of surprising that he would still carry like a really heavy ticket. I guess right. If they're not attaching him, that and it was a relief pitcher coming back, it'd probably be somebody that Toronto's familiar with, because like the guys that are at the back end of their bullpen are like Aaron Loop and Ryan Tepera.
Right, familiar names, old home week, you know. So we'll see. It's an interesting question, but the Jays have definitely talked with the Tigers in recent days about their group of relievers. I think Fulmer, as we talked about last week, is probably the most likely of them. But I think we're also seeing some teams in the industry, whether it's the Montas Trevino deal, attaching a reliever to a starter can be a way to either financially help the selling team to unburden themselves of the contract, or help realize multiple needs on the part of the buyer. So I would say that we can't rule out the possibility of Iglesias being attached to Syndergaard, but I have not heard of that directly being being discussed right now.
Yeah, okay, so let's go to this one, John. Is that the Jays are the only team that's a real, I would say, part of the heavyweight class of the American League that has stood pat so far. And there's been some reports that, and this is just like the classic Blue Jays report, we always kind of make fun of them for this, is that they're always the runner-up on a deal. It's like, as soon as the news breaks on a big player, you can be sure that the next report will be that, hey, you guys don't know how close the Jays were. They were right there. This time it was, I think the verbiage was, they were neck and neck with Trevino and Montas. Like, they were so close. Oh, boy, were they ever close. What do you just read about just the market? Has it shifted at all to maybe a little bit more of a buyer's market, considering a lot of teams have gotten work done? Like, now you're looking at the last, you know, few hours of this thing, the last 11 hours of this thing, and the Yankees look like most of their work is done. You look at the Astros and potentially like most of their work is done. Like, how many? There's a bunch of teams that are obviously holding on to pieces and assets to be a part of the Juan Soto move. Have the Blue Jays read this correctly? Like, do we think that maybe prices are going to start to come down, or did they just miss the boat on a bunch of names?
Well, JD, it's a really important question, and I think that they have certainly seen some key guys go off the board, whether it's Castillo or Montas. And let's remember, Malley, when the Reds came up here earlier this season, Tyler Malley did not, because he wasn't vaccinated. And so he is probably high on the list of a lot of teams, but unless something has changed, the Jays can't be one of them. And that's a really significant issue to keep in mind here. There's like one more box to check here for all these players, and can they actually travel to Canada and play? So there's not really anything known about a lot of the guys, because their teams haven't come to Canada this year if they're in the National League in many cases. But I do think, you know, in the case of Syndergaard, in the case of Rodon from the Giants, these are pitchers that are among the best available. And I think Rodon has broad interest in the industry, especially if the Giants are going to price him reasonably in a way that helps them recoup some prospects, and then maybe they become a late entrant to the Soto sweepstakes. So I would say this in general. If you are a fan of really frenetic deadline days, then yesterday was great for you, because when there are a lot of deals that happen on the day before, it makes for a more active deadline day, because teams now have a chance to look at the reshuffled board, and it just helps to get more activity going. I think sometimes when there's one main deal and everybody's waiting on that one guy, if we had woken up today and the Hader deal hadn't happened and Montas hadn't happened, then I might be a little bit more pessimistic about a really busy day, because everybody would be waiting on Soto. But because other things happened, it repositioned the board a little bit and made other moves possible. So I think the Jays, they certainly missed out. I think especially Montas was the guy that I thought really would have been a good fit. And I think the interesting thing about the Jays, and this is where their farm system is sort of interesting to talk about, because Martinez has not really had a great year. Moreno is a tremendous prospect defensively. Maybe he had some questions when he got to the major league level this season. So there are still some questions about their very best guys. And whereas like Tiedemann might be their best prospect right now, and how well he has pitched in Vancouver. So they have good prospects to move, but this is not one of those slam dunk Dodger systems where their top 10 or 15 goes as deep as some teams' top fives, where like they just got 10 or 12 prospects that are at the level of maybe the top three or four of other teams. The Dodgers are the team that no one can count out on Soto until the final the buzzer on this, because we've seen them too many times be able to swoop in and make a huge deal on deadline day.
Okay, I want to come back to a bunch of the stuff that you said there about the top-end guys and, you know, Soto specifically and how that all relates to it, because, yeah, he's the major name today. Like, so much of this is like, you're a Blue Jays fan, you care about what the Blue Jays are going to do at the deadline. I think that you care about what the other American League teams are doing, but Juan Soto is the caliber of player where it's like, we all care what ends up happening to him, and, like, that's sure. actually going to move the needle for national baseball fans. But it's funny because, like, the Jays farm system, from everything that we hear for most part, is like, yeah, those top three guys are pretty undeniable in terms of what teams are interested in. To me, it's like the more curious thing has always been how teams evaluate all their other guys. Like, the Hader trade happens, and I go, is Josh Hader unvaccinated? Like, is he on a list of players that are ineligible for Canada? Because if you look at what happened there, it's like the highest rankings I saw for the two prospects that won that deal are their 8 and 9 guys. And you go beyond that, and it's like Lamet is a completely distressed asset. Like, you can't even put him in a baseball game and be serious right now. And, yeah, Trevor Rogers is, I guess, technically a closer, but he's still someone who carries a negative WAR on the season. And I would think, like, oh, man, that's a guy that the Blue Jays would be in on. Because, again, he has control. Do you get the sense, like, because now we're seeing Syndergaard, and you're talking about Michael Fulmer. Like, these are rentals. And so for a market where the Jays are still kind of, you know, chasing that top seed in the wild card, and there seems to be a gap between them and the two top teams in the division that have clearly loaded up, does it surprise you at all that, like, the names that we're sort of hearing linked to them most closely are guys that are rentals and not relievers with control?
It doesn't surprise me, to be honest. And I think that the Jays, when they're talking with the Tigers, they might still ask about Joe Jimenez, who has control, or Gregory Soto, who has control. Like, that could still happen. And with the Angels, there could still be conversations about other prospects and players who make sense. I mentioned yesterday Luis Renjifo, who's a really underrated. You know, check out his numbers over the last month, and is a really versatile second baseman, shortstop. He's just a really nice winning piece on a good team, and he's a switch hitter. And we know the Jays need some more left-handed bats. So I think that there are certainly ways that a Syndergaard deal could grow to include some non-rentals, but it does not surprise me in that this front office group, in many cases, now Berríos was an exception to this, where they have been more comfortable with the price on the rentals as opposed to really going big for the multi-year control guys at the deadline. Obviously, Chapman was an off-season move. It's right now, I think the Jays, just based on where they are in the market, seem to either A, be reluctant to give up their 1, 2, or 3 prospects, and that's Moreno, Martinez, and Tiedemann, or B, their next group down is not quite as appealing as other teams. The other part that I should mention on the Hader deal, and you alluded to this, you know, while Rogers isn't having a great season, he is still a major league piece. And so if the Jays were comfortable, depending on how teams feel about Gurriel, how they feel about Hernandez, or again, the reason why they're not probably a significant player on Soto is that it appears to me that they're not comfortable putting Bichette into the deal. And I think that if they were willing to listen on Bo, they would be in the Soto conversation. I really believe that. But I think so far I have not gotten the sense that they're willing to put Bichette in the deal for Soto.
See, that's infuriating to me. I got to tell you, like, I don't – unless they feel as though there's a strong chance of re-signing Bo Bichette, then I don't know why you wouldn't look at upgrading your team for a player that only has one more year of control. Like, this isn't Bo Bichette 4 years extra of control than Soto. It's like, no, there's a difference between one. Soto clearly fits the lineup way better. They've been dying for a lefty bat with pop. And, like, this is somebody who's been top five for MVP the last 2 years, and I think has a career OPS of over 960. Yeah, even if you're quote-unquote renting him, it's for 3 playoff runs. I for the life of me, don't understand the Bo Bichette thing. And so, like, do you think that they've actively had maybe the conversations that surround that, like that? Because I've always thought that the number one piece to get you to sit down at the Soto table, based on everybody we've heard, including the Gavin Luxes and the Dustin Mays of the world or whoever else has been rumored to the Soto deal, that, like, Bo Bichette's value carries immensely more than just about anybody else that I've heard.
Right. And I if it were me, and looking at the way this deal could come together, obviously the next question would be, well, what do you get back to play shortstop, and kind of how do you fill in Bo's spot? But it gets back to probably the way this front office has always viewed trade assets and how you should handle things at the deadline. Remember, this goes back 7 years to the way they responded to Alex Anthopoulos going all in for the rentals that he did with David Price. But you and I looking at this, and again, it's easy for me to say, but I would look at it and say, if you have to do Bo plus Martinez and Tiedemann for Soto,
no, I
would at least have to think about that. I mean, it's a steep price. But here's where the second half of this comes in. If at the same time you're able to trade some different prospects to get Renjifo and Syndergaard, Renjifo can play short, mm-hmm. and Syndergaard obviously fills in your rotation right now. I'd be pretty excited about that. That would make a ton of sense to me. Now it would leave, you know, you, of your top 10 prospects, you might only have 5 of them left. But at this point, you're all in for this year because, to your point, you don't know if you're going to be able to sign Vladdy long term. Springer has this elbow thing going on, which I think you're probably concerned about, and maybe you have to get a center fielder as a result of it. But it's going to be a very interesting couple days, and I do think, for me, JD, I would err on the side of being more aggressive with Soto, and a chance to get a player like this only comes around once in a lifetime, and he is exactly, as we've talked before, exactly what the Jays need. Exactly.
Yeah.
And listen, he fits everybody, but the Jays are screaming for a left-handed bat, and he's obviously a pretty good left-handed bat.
I just look at it and go, a year from now, is it outside the realm of possibility that the Jays tell Bo, like, hey, we want to get something done. We want some certainty. Like, we're in the same position now that Soto's in, and he tells them, I'm not signing anything long-term, and that's like, what do you do? You know? Like, it's just like, again, you need the assurance if you're the front office that you're going to be offering the money to Vladdy and Bo, and that those two guys want to stay here, and that they're down for the level of contract that you're going to be able to levy over. Because it's just like, if you're ending up flipping Bo Bichette at some point in his Blue Jays tenure, and people are going to look back on it and go, wait a second, you could have had Juan Soto for 3 runs? I think that's like that's cataclysmic disaster. That's like a straight up... barring no World Series win, like, that could be legacy defining for this front office. It's that kind of bad when we're talking about that level of superstar that fits this team perfectly and not being willing to budge on that player. So yeah, that is surprising to me to a certain degree, because that was one of my biggest questions to ask you today, is like, why are they not more aggressive for this player? I cannot for the life of me understand it. Okay, so last one for me anyways. I don't know, Ailish, if you have more, but what's your understanding of neck and neck with the Yankees for Trevino and Montas? Like, what do you think that the Jays were looking at price-wise when it came to trying to dish out for those two players? Because I think that helps us inform sort of where they'd be willing to go for trade packages today that involve starters and relievers.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll be honest and say the specific last final offer that the Jays made, I am not sure of exactly who was in the last one, but I do think for the controllable piece, for the controllable starting pitcher with Montas, that they were willing to give up one of the top three, Moreno, Martinez, or Tiedemann. That at least one of those top three would have been in their best offer for Montas. And I think that they were just maybe not able to match up on the depth. Maybe and one thing to remember, JD, on the trade conversations in general, is sometimes a team will say, prospect A is not in play as part of a package for this player, but if it's just this player for your guy, I'll do it. And I think we're talking about that right now with the Cardinals, where Dylan Carlson has not been part of the larger package for Juan Soto. But I think that if it was just a smaller deal, like Carlson plus one other guy, they might consider it. But not Carlson plus Walker plus Mason Wynn plus Libertor. So I'm always careful about saying this prospect is not in play at all, because sometimes if it's a small deal where it's like, hey, one for one, let's do it, that a prospect of that caliber is in play. So my understanding was that the Jays would have given up one of Martinez, Moreno, and Tiedemann to get Montas, but I'm not sure who else was involved after them. And obviously that's sort of going to be one of our very interesting homework assignments to figure out here in the weeks ahead about exactly how close they actually got.
Well, we have our text or our tweet alerts on for you, especially today. Should be an interesting one. Hopefully the Jays, you got some Jays news for us in the coming hours.
Yes, hopefully, Ailish. Thank you very much. There may be, as there often is during the course of my day, there may be a hockey tweet or two, for which I apologize, but the rest of it is baseball.
World Juniors are coming up. I know you'll be in on that, too.
I got a good little segment for my interview with Thomas Bortolo that I want to get out there. So that's, I would say there might be a one Thomas Bortolo tweet today, but aside from that, it'll be all baseball.
That's acceptable. We'll take it. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much, Ailish and JD. I really, really appreciate it.
No problem. Good luck today.
Thanks so much. I need it. Thank you very much.
John Morosi, MLB Network Insider. He's all over Sportsnet, too. We kind of also call him our own. So. Lots there. Whew.
Well, lots there. I'm going to start with this. This was my fear. I've been saying this for a month heading into the deadline. I know the Jays have three guys that people around baseball covet.
Mm-hmm.
One of those guys' stock is down in Martinez. I am not aware to the degree in which the stock is down, but it's just not up, okay? It's just the stock is not up. It's certainly not where it was during the offseason, where some people were wondering like how fast this guy could make the major leagues. That conversation isn't happening right now with him. Tiedemann's stock is obviously up. His stock has risen. You just heard Morosi say that he might even be the Jays' number one prospect, which is a pretty flattering thing, considering that, say what you will about Gabriel Moreno and whether or not he's a top five on everybody's list and whether he's just a top five on publications like Baseball America. The fact is, if you're even considering that he's higher than him, that's a top-tier prospect. They've got three guys that unequivocally around baseball are coveted. But I mentioned this over and over and over again. What is the rest of the Jays farm system? That's why we talked to Jim Callis earlier last week. Is what is the rest of the farm system? He was higher on Jordan Groshans than literally every other person that I've asked.
He put him as number two almost, didn't he?
He put him as still a top 100 prospect. And everyone else that I have checked with has not backed that. Maybe there are still organizations that are interested in Jordan Groshans. I'm not saying that there's no team that would want to acquire him. What I'm saying is, what's spooky about right now for the Jays, if you have a concern-o-meter, it's that teams do not love anything beyond your top three prospects. Teams are not trying to move heaven and earth, or are not jumping at the opportunity to acquire those guys that are further down the line. It makes sense, obviously, that one of the Jays' top three guys would be in a deal for a closer and a starting pitcher that could end up being the number three if he's healthy and all things go according to plan for him. The A's deal, right? Of course, that makes sense. What is going to happen today when you try to get involved in the likes of the Detroit trade that he just mentioned, like, or the possibility of going after Detroit's relievers, where it's like, hey, we want to not just get rental Michael Fulmer, okay? Because, like, again, Frankie Montas comes with another year of control. So that's why you go, okay, well, that makes sense. You're getting another year of control of this guy. You're going to give a top three prospect up. All right, this makes sense. It's a front-end starter, even with the injury concerns. Are you going to be able to beat out some of the teams in the National League? Because it feels like the American League got all their business done yesterday. Not all, but you know what I mean. Like, the big-time players got ahead of the market. They paid the steep prices. They went out and got what they wanted in Houston and New York. And then to a lesser extent, but the the Seattle Mariners went out and made their top end piece, and I'm not sure how much other movement that they're going to have today in terms of being at the top of the pile, because they went out and used their best pieces. But if you're competing with all these National League teams over the coming 11 hours, are you going to be able to win a trade given that your farm system is not overly deep? And are you going to be a little bit reluctant, if you're the Blue Jays, to make an aggressive deal,
knowing that you don't have a lot of...
Exactly. That you do not have a farm system that's chock full of guys right now. And this is an organization that highly covets having organizational depth. And they have stated publicly that they do not ever want to be all in with prospects, that they believe in the waves, you know, wave after wave of player. It's why, again, I don't understand if you're moving those guys, those top three dudes, and you're not just taking two of them with Bo Bichette and getting in on the Juan Soto thing. So that's number two. Number two is just like, Jays better re-sign Bo.
Jays
better re-sign Bo. Well, if they're unwilling to move him for Juan Soto, Juan freaking Soto, there's no reality, even including their positions, where Bo Bichette is as valuable as Juan Soto, or even in like a, I shouldn't say in the same stratosphere, because we're obviously trying to say like he's a main piece, but even if you include Bo Bichette with his extra year of control to Washington, it would take a bunch more pieces to get that done. That's the gap between Bo's value and Soto's value right now. It's just gonna, you think about players that fit what this team needs perfectly, and it's Juan Soto. Again, you do not want to be in the business of trading guys like Bo Bichette. This is not, I wouldn't be advocating for trading Bo in any other scenario than this. Like, this isn't me going, oh, they should be trading Bo Bichette to go out and get an older player.
What if there's Ohtani offseason?
He's 24 years old. Even, honest to God, even Ohtani, like...
Maybe they feel like they're really confident about Ohtani offseason, and that's why they're less in.
Ohtani's only going to have 1 year left, though. So, again, unless you're... And he's someone who has had injuries throughout his career. I'm not as high as on Ohtani as I am with Soto. Oh. Because of the age, given... Mm-hmm. I mentioned, the thing with Soto is he's missed 23 games, I think I wrote it down, 23 games with injury throughout his career. He missed a few more with illness, but it was like, no, that doesn't... Like, injuries that this guy's had, it's been two different injuries, very minor, he's missed very little time. He's healthy, he's young, he brings power, he's a lefty bat, and he's under contract for three playoff runs. Shohei Ohtani just comes with a little bit more risk to me. Like, if you're trading Bo Bichette for Shohei Ohtani, that's two extra years of Bo for Shohei. I don't know. Then you're starting to get into tricky waters. I think that one less year of Bo or one extra year of Bo is not worth one not missing out on Juan Soto. To me, this has to be a thing where maybe Washington doesn't covet the Blue Jays' top-end prospects the same way. Because I don't understand why the Jays wouldn't include Bo. Like, I just do not get why Bo Bichette would be a deal breaker for a guy of that caliber. So, yeah, we'll see what the final trade ends up becoming and what the pieces are. Again, it's going to look like an unbelievably heavy price point. But boy, oh boy, oh boy. You're talking about win now, win in the future, still have the potential to re-sign somebody. Juan Soto is the guy to me. He should be this is what you do it for. This is why you play the game. This is what you move the pieces in the middle for. Rather than using your top three assets to try to be in on the mix for, you know, injury-prone Frankie Montas and a relief pitcher from Oakland that is fine but not, you know, incredible. But, yeah, what is the depth of this farm system? Are they going to have the pieces that net them back at those high-end, highly coveted relief pitchers like Soto, like Jimenez, or are they going to end up with a little bit more bargain shopping where they grab a Syndergaard and a Ryan Tepera? Because I think that would be not exactly the most exciting of deadlines. And for a team that's been active and the most active today and aggressive and in on everything, adding bullpen arms that don't have the impact that this team clearly needs, or potentially don't have the term that this team needs, and starting pitchers that, you know, are depth guys but are rentals that aren't going to be here next year, that still leaves you a lot of work to do this offseason. That would be a pretty disappointing deadline for me. And with that, you have a chew.
I do. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. Okay, so trade-related, lots going on. The Brewers traded Josh Hader, and it was poorly received by their fan base, enough so that the Brewers put out a statement. First time I've really ever seen a team defend a trade on Twitter. This is what it read. The players we are receiving in this trade help ensure that the future of the Milwaukee Brewers remains bright while not compromising our desire and expectation to win today. This mix of present major league talent and high-level prospects furthers our aim to get as many bites of the apple as possible and ultimately to bring a World Series to Milwaukee.
They used bites at the apple.
They sure did. Yeah. Trading good players on good teams is difficult, and that certainly is the case with Josh. We also recognize that to give our organization the best chance for sustained competitiveness, to avoid the extended down periods that so many organizations experience, we must make decisions that are not easy.
Okay. That was too long. I lost interest after bites at the apple. I went, yeah, like this is an excuse. Trading Josh Hader makes no sense unless you know Josh Hader's arm's about to fall off. He's incredible. Like he had 19 straight strikeouts. I think that was last year. If you told me, hey, JD, your life's on the line, pick from five relievers, you need to get an out today. He's on the list. They have two closers within the organization. Since when is that a bad thing? That's what I'm advocating for the Blue Jays to have gone out and done. And John mentioned that they gave up a major league piece, but he went so high, he was like, well, did you do a Gurriel or a Teoscar? It's like, I don't think, like, that's not my understanding at all of what Trevor Richards' value is. This gets back to what I was saying before. Were they unable to be in on a Josh Hader trade because their number 8 and 9 prospects, when you look at it from San Diego's standpoint that's acquiring him, that they're worlds apart from what the Jays have even at like 4 or 5. Like how they're looked at around baseball, could they ever even get a seat at the table for a guy like Josh Hader without using one of their top 3 guys? Or it's like, it's one thing, I think maybe it's not one of two things, but if you're an optimistic Blue Jays fan right now, you're saying these guys know that they're not desperate, that this year they're in a good spot, but it's not an all-in year. They don't like to move crazy prospect capital. They don't want to get nuts at the deadline. They know that prospects mean something to them. They're playing this correctly. They're waiting until the buyers continue to go, and they're biding their time to grab the desperate sellers who are looking to offload starting pitchers and relievers, and that the difference in the market is not that great between, you know, Noah Syndergaard and Martin Perez. And so they're playing this correctly. They're doing this well, and they will jump when the time is right. The pessimist looks at this and goes, maybe the Jays don't have as many pieces as a lot of these other teams around baseball, that an organization that prides themselves on always having a deep farm system does not have a very deep farm system, and it has prevented them from making moves that other teams have made so far because they do not have pieces that are attractive to other organizations. We can all base our thoughts off of top 100s and try to compare directly, like apples to apples, where you go, oh, well, if the Jays had given up their number one prospect in a deal versus this team's number one, that's not how this works. The Jays' number 5 prospect is not the Padres' number 5 prospect. The Jays' number 10 prospect is not the Dodgers' number 10 prospect. And that's the scary part to me, is what have they missed out on because they might not have the pieces that other teams like? And will that continue throughout today as the National League heavyweights start to get more heavily involved once we get a little bit more clarity on what's going on with Juan Soto? And once some of those other teams jump into the mix and try to shore up what is their need, which is always pitching and always relief pitching. So we'll see. Let's take a break. Let's continue this conversation with Ben Nicholson-Smith. What's up with Springer's elbow too? What's the concernometer on this as well? That's all next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Reach us anytime on Twitter or on Instagram at JD Bunkus at Ailish Forfar. We always want to hear from you, especially today. You know, are you concerned? What's your feeling? What do you want? All those different things. Ben Nicholson-Smith of At the Letters next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. MLB trade deadline hours away. That will give us all the Jays related scoops that we need. Ben Nicholson Smith, sports at MLB editor and co-host of At the Letters podcast. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. How's it going?
Oh, we're doing well. We're excited. Vibes are high. Hoping for some Jays news soon. What are your thoughts on Syndergaard comments and if that's something we should be expecting today?
I think keep an eye out for sure. To expect anything is tricky this time of year because things can change quickly, but he's a fit, right? And one thing that I've kind of wondered as the trade market has moved on starting pitchers in the last couple of days here, with Montas going to the Yankees, with Quintana going from the Pirates to the Cardinals, is, you know, how much is out there for the Blue Jays right now? And it was a pretty thin market to begin with. Tyler Mahle, someone who is not going to move to the Blue Jays because of his vaccination status. It appears that Merrill Kelly's in the same boat. Tarik Skubal was hurt, so, or at least, you know, experiencing some discomfort. So there don't seem to be a ton of starting pitching options right now. Syndergaard is one. Martin Perez is another to keep an eye on here as the hours tick down towards 6 p.m. today. But I do think that there's a real chance there. There's a fit. He's more of a back-end guy at this point in his career, but he would still help the Blue Jays, and he would still upgrade their pitching staff.
So things so far, from my vantage point, are working out okay. Because I was never all that interested in the Jays mortgaging some of their top three assets for guys like Frankie Montas, who come with injury concerns. And frankly, I've never been the biggest fan of the guy. I think that maybe it's a little bit of confirmation bias, but I do feel like he's never been a pitcher that I've been, you know, head over heels with. And Trevino, same thing, where it's like, hey, that's a good reliever, that's a nice trade. You do a trade like that because of the control, but I have always looked at the Jays as you can be players in the rental market, hopefully for prices that are a little bit lower, and try to get your long-term work done or a little bit more work done with the addition of left-handed hitting and or bullpen relief or bullpen help that actually is swing and miss and actually has a little bit of control, so that you don't have to just go out in this offseason and try to continue to acquire something that, like, you desperately need. I'm fine with a Perez. I'm fine with a Noah Syndergaard, but we were just talking Morosi, and it sure seems like from his vantage point that the Jays are really trying to do we'd like to get a pitcher, a starter, and a reliever both done in the same kind of deal. Is that sort of your gut feel for things as well right now?
I think they definitely want a starter and a reliever. I mean, that's clear. Whether it happens in the same deal, I don't think really matters to the Jays. I think that they clearly need to be adding meaningfully to their bullpen if the starting pitching add is, let's say it's Noah Syndergaard, let's say it's Martin Perez. I mean, okay, those guys are going to be an upgrade over Max Castillo. Who's essentially your sixth starter right now.
It was really not hard to get the upgrade
right
there. Really not that hard. The bar was low.
Exactly, which is why they should do it. Because if you can make an upgrade, because Castillo's on the roster right now, and if you option him to AAA, he's still in the organization, you're better off overall. So that's why you want to do it. Now, that doesn't really change the outlook of how you're going to manage this team when it really counts in October. Because even if they acquire, let's say it's a Martin Perez, let's say it's a Noah Syndergaard, the way Syndergaard is going, I know he's a big name, but he's not the swing and miss guy that he was earlier in his career. So chances are he's your number 4, 5, 6 starter, and that's fine, but you still need the high octane swing and miss for October. So that's where that sort of addition would have to be paired with someone like a David Robertson, who's a free agent coming up after this year, but in very high demand from the Chicago Cubs. Or is it a Joe Jimenez, who just looked lights out over the weekend at Rogers Center against the Blue Jays? But the Tigers are like, why would we just give this guy away when we can keep him next year and we might be a rebound team that could benefit from having a really good bullpen? So it's not as though these teams are going to hand these players over, but I still don't think the Jays are going to have to at this point give up their top prospects, because Luis Castillo is off the board. Montas is off the board. Doesn't appear that the Jays are a big finalist for Soto, even though that's going to be a huge development to watch across baseball today. So, you know, really, you've got a team that needs to upgrade their pitching. The Jays have to make multiple trades today. They have to add. And so that's, I think both starters and relievers are going to be added to this team. Certainly the bullpen, and then likely starters too.
Yeah, so I'm optimistic that they will make moves, right? Like, I don't think that there's anybody out there that thinks that, you know, come the 11th hour, they're going to be, oh my God, they didn't get a starter, they didn't get a reliever. My, I guess, concern is what it has been for the last month, which is what I just talked about before going to break. They clearly have three guys that they don't really want to part with unless it's for a major move. Like, Morosi believes that one of the three guys would have been involved in the Yankees A's trade, that the Jays were there, you know, they were sitting at the table, they wanted Montas, they wanted Trevino, and had they done that move, that one of those top three guys, and Tiedemann, Martinez, and Moreno would have been involved, which he doesn't know, but the belief is one of the three guys was there. If you look at the Jays farm system beyond those guys, it's very spotty and it's very full of, well, maybe these guys are coveted around baseball in certain spots, but it certainly doesn't really appear that way. And so when we're talking about like guys like Jimenez who have control, and like I think Jimenez has like 56 strikeouts over his like 38 or 39 innings. Like, he's exactly what they need, right? Gregory Soto, same kind of thing. Just like blow away stuff, strike you out, sit you down, back into the bullpen, playoff type of guy. I am a little concerned, I guess, if I have any concern, not that the Jays are hungry, not that the Jays are being aggressive, not that they're going after guys, but that a lot of these organizations are looking at their prospect depth and saying, we just think that we can do better from other places, and if you guys aren't willing to fork over one of those three guys, then we're just going to go down the line and take the next phone call.
And that'll happen. I mean, that certainly happened with Luis Castillo, where the Jays showed a little bit of interest but weren't ultimately pushing. I heard the Jays had strong interest in Montas as well. You know, I'd be really surprised if they were willing to give up Gabriel Moreno. But Aureliz, maybe. I'm not sure. That's speculation right now. But the thing is, that's going to happen. That's part of trading. You don't have to make every trade. You don't have to be the high bidder on every good player. What you have to do is you have to find enough matches out there that you land two or three of them, that you land two or three really good ones. And there are enough good players still out there that the Blue Jays are still in a position where they can get that done. Now, look, if they miss on everyone, then tomorrow, obviously, it's a different conversation. They missed the chance to bolster this team. They've missed that opportunity. We'll have that conversation then. But today, those opportunities still exist. And the competition's still there, too. I mean, the Phillies want starting pitching. The Twins want starting pitching. The Mets want relief pitching. So there's competition out there for these players that the Blue Jays want and need, really. They do need them. But they don't. Not every one of their prospects has to be the most coveted player in the eyes of all these teams, because you only have to ultimately land, really, it's two or three pitchers that you're looking to land today. You know, it's only two or three players. So as long as you do that, then you've really improved things and probably done so without totally depleting the farm system.
Yeah. Again, I know they're going to do something. I know they're going to add, because they have to, right? Like, you legitimately cannot go down the stretch with Ross Stripling getting close to his career innings pitched, to Yusei Kikuchi banking on his bounce back, to having Max Castillo right there in your rotation should something happen. It's not plausible. It's not going to happen. They're going to add a starting pitcher. I have, like, you know, the most confident. If it was on the board as a bet, it'd be minus 10,000. Like, they're definitely going to do it. Relief pitching, to me, this is going to be the most interesting part of today, which is, do they just go out and get relievers and say, well, our bullpen's better, a.k.a. the Simber Richards moves from a year ago, where, yeah, those moves worked out for you because they were wins above replacement guys, especially considering what you had in there, right? Like, you think about the upgrade that they got with those relief pitchers, but they weren't what you needed. Richards a little bit more of a swing and miss guy, but Jays need heat out of the back of the bullpen, and that I think is going to cost them assets. And if they're going to go up into that top tier, like, that's what I'm going to be evaluating them on, is did they go out and get blowaway stuff guys? Did they go out and get strikeout artists for the back end of the bullpen? And did they get guys with control? Because that's going to be the way that I evaluate this. Do you think that, yeah, like, what's your read on their prioritizing of trying to get control? Because this has always been a front office that, you know, Ross Atkins famously had the years of control acquired deadline, where they talked about the importance of that. Every team covets it, but do you think that's going to be something that they try to do with the relief market? Like, that they're going to try to shore up some of next year so that they're not back in this position during the offseason?
I think they should. I think they should for sure. Now, it's interesting with control, right? If you're talking about Juan Soto, then control's everything. I mean, that's huge because you can project with a pretty high degree of confidence what that's going to look like. Even for a starting pitcher, we have a very good idea that Luis Castillo will be a good pitcher next year. Now, for relievers, because they're so volatile, control almost matters less because, you know, 2025, Gregory Soto's last year before free agency. What's he going to look like then? Even Joe Jimenez, next year, his last year before free agency. There's a certain amount of volatility. So to me, and this is not only the Blue Jays, but other teams around baseball, you look at that and you say, okay, the control's nice. I mean, it's good, but you might be non-tendering this guy in 2 years anyway. So it's not exactly quite as valuable. And so in turn, I don't think the Jays and most teams around baseball put that same price on it. But of course, if you're the Tigers and you're holding on to these guys, you're not going to give them away on a silver platter. So this is where you get to this tug of war. And I agree with you, JD. I think, you know, if the Jays at the end of today have acquired, for argument's sake, it's Noah Syndergaard and Michael Fulmer. Okay. I mean, that's a little underwhelming to me. I mean, that's the sort of deadline where, yes, you've added, okay, you've indicated to the clubhouse that this is a group that you believe in to some extent, but like those guys don't necessarily help you in your first playoff series, like in your wild card series, your best of three series, which is, you know, you have to win that to win the World Series. Well, how did those types of players help you? So that's where, to me, I think the Blue Jays are better off today. If they give up a good prospect to get someone like Joe Jimenez, who actually gets swing and miss, as opposed to someone who strikes out 7.5 batters per nine, but you only had to give up a backhand prospect.
Okay, before we let you go, a little bit of a Blue Jays update. What's going on with Springer? Is it an injury concern to you, or just something that it looks like a little tweak, possibly?
I think it's a concern at this point, and we don't know exactly. I mean, John Schneider on Sunday morning didn't meet with the media. The manager doesn't on Sunday, so we didn't get the full report from him then. What we do know is Springer missed two of the last three Tigers games, and he has missed three of the nine games that the Blue Jays have played since returning from the All-Star break. Again, you come back from a week off, he's missed three of nine since then. So he's not 100%. That's obvious. I mean, you can see him grimacing, and he's trying to gut it out. He's doing everything that he can to be out on the field, but you see him grimacing when he's swinging, when he's throwing. So that elbow is a concern. I don't know how long-term it is. I mean, is that something that can sort itself out in the course of the season when you're playing max effort the way he does? I don't know. I mean, you're obviously hoping it can if you're the Blue Jays. I don't think you can necessarily assume it just sorts itself out right now. I mean, there will be ways to address this in the offseason, no doubt. But, you know, it's a question to me. And I think it's reason to potentially look at the likes of Ramon Laureano and see if there are ways to reinforce behind.
You know, we talk a lot about how the bullpen is the reason why they missed the playoffs last year. But one of the cases for this season was, well, you're going to get a full season of Springer, hopefully. If you look back on it right now, it's like, yeah, he was good last year. But year one of the contract, he was beat up. That's $22 million that year. This year, again, it's like it's $28 million, and now he's beat up and the OPS has dropped. He's 32. He's going to be turning 33 soon. There's four more years on that deal after this. Like, I think that, yeah, you absolutely need to start thinking about reinforcements behind him because, yeah, you've got to find ways to not only keep this guy on the field but have him healthy when he's on it. Because, yeah, I think it's been one of the undertold stories of the season. It's not something that I would expect Springer shows up next year and looks bad or anything like that, or that he's going to just completely age out overnight. But I do remember the conversation about, is he going to be a center fielder? And I do wonder how rapidly that is going to change and how much they want him diving around in center field and banging that elbow around more and more and more as he hits the mid-30s. Ben Nicholson-Smith, you are the best. We will talk to you very soon, and we will be following you on all your socials today. You've got the alerts, all right? Like we got the alerts set up for your name, so don't be doing any like frivolous tweeting out here, all right? Like it's you know, high stuff only.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of pressure. The alerts. I think it's also kind of funny because I'm like, I didn't ask anyone to put an alert on my tweet.
Too bad. Too bad. That's the business. This is the business you've chosen. Ben Nicholson-Smith of the Excellent at the Letters podcast, MLB editor here for Sportsnet. Thanks for jumping on this morning, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Have a good one. Enjoy the deadline.
See you, pal. Yeah, I will enjoy the deadline if it is what I need it to be, which is adding high-end velocity at the back end of the bullpen, strikeout artists, guys who get punchies. Michael Fulmer does not interest me. 93 is not what I want to see. I want to see 97 plus. Okay?
All right.
Also, of course, there's no discussion really around it, but I do wonder like about Nate Pearson and all this.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking about him today, about how, like, would an organization try to, like, swoop in and grab him, and could he be a guy that gets dealt? Well, yeah, if we're talking about, like, down-the-line guys, like, if you're looking for relievers and if you're Detroit and you're talking about a Jimenez trade and you're not getting the top three guys, like, maybe he's
zero
one of the dudes
track record and
yeah.
Can seems
you even
to
trade
be
him
cursed.
With his, well, and his injuries right now, you know, can you even move him? Can you get teams to waive, like, him passing a physical? Anyway, let's continue this conversation. More insiders, more insiders, more insiders. Let's head over to ESPN and talk to Kylie McDaniel, ESPN MLB insider. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.